Actually,
and we're live with our 314th episode of Absolute Absic. I'm Ken Johnson at CK Tricky on social media, and also the fastest clicker in the West, and my co-host Seth Law at Seth Law on social media. Seth, say hi.
Hi, welcome to another episode. Sorry about the miscommunication there. I was trying to load something. It wasn't actually working. So welcome back to another episode. Always excited to be here. Always excited to talk all the things. I'm wondering if my internet is slow, but it looks like it's working. Sounds like it's working. We got a bunch to actually go over today. Before we launch into the actual topics and cloud security, because I know that's going to come up, and a few other things. I did want to dig into the course for a little bit, right? Ken and I will be teaching Harnessing LLMs for Application Security, both at KernelCon and at DEF CON Singapore, right? So there's two opportunities in April, one in the United States. So in Omaha at KernelCon, we've been there for a couple of years. This is a great opportunity for everybody to get in and actually join and learn about LLMs, and DEF CON Singapore. If you are in Southeast Asia, happy to have you and excited to actually get back to Singapore. It's an amazing place. So, but with that, we've had a couple of questions that I wanted to answer about the course in general. It's called Harnessing LLMs for Application Security. We've taught this a couple of times. It is changing rapidly based on the current foundational models, the expertise, the new, you know, open class skills, agents, everything else that's going on in the AI world. But Ken was the one that first came to me about actually teaching this course, and it was an offshoot of Practical Secure Code Review. So my question to you, Ken, first one right off the bat. So what is this course about and who is it designed for?
It's designed for people that are that come from a security background, especially like ProdSec. Well, I mean, developers can do it too, but I think like really our goal is to get security professionals to learn how to build security-centric tooling or use the tooling that their developers are using geared towards the security, persona, we'll say. So why did we start it? Well, because it was like ridiculously hard to do. Even now, I mean, I still see people who have very limited knowledge. I mean, there's a big, big swath of security who has very limited knowledge as to what the most up-to-date tooling looks like, what the most up-to-date processes look like. And of course, again, just even though AI assisted coding does help to, get off the ground quicker, it's still incredibly difficult, and you need kind of a guide of why am I, you know, using these components? How do I orchestrate? How do I evaluate things of that nature? So it's just a new field. A lot of people don't know things. I think like it's really good for security people specifically to build tooling and whatnot.
Yeah. I mean, in my estimation, right? Like as I saw it come about, it was because we were teaching Practical Secure Code Review. And to your point, our developers were using Copilot to start, right? So an AI agent in the IDE. And we realized that it was very effective to utilize that to identify security issues and ask questions about security when it came to the manual code review that we were doing. And it was a natural extension there to start to build the tooling. And even before we came online today, one of the things that we were talking about is how hard it is to operationalize and to utilize LLMs and AI for application security topics, right? It's one thing to get an answer from an LLM that is security related about a code vulnerability, but it's another to do that repeatedly and be able to instrument tooling that will identify those vulnerabilities time and time again. And I think that's really like the main takeaway that I've got here is that it's not as easy as what it seems to be when you initially start playing with LLMs, right?
Yeah, and I guess I would add to that too. Like, I do want to say that if you are a very small shop, and maybe you're even just one person, it's like that you can get pretty. I guess if you have a very small engineering group and you're just like one person in C, I feel like you can get away or get pretty far with you know, a combination of. And I know we're going to talk about cloud security review and skills and things like that. You can get pretty far with that. You can get pretty far if you combine that as well with like OpenGrep or whatever. But yeah, if you're going to have to do something for like a serious organization, well, yeah, the data change, the velocity changes, the data management changes, the drift happens quicker. There's a lot you have to upkeep. So less work on a small team, a lot more difficulty when you have to create production grade at scale systems.
Yeah. So just to wrap it up, right? Like before we dive into, you know, cloud security or the cloud code review stuff, whatever it is, what would you say is the one common misconception people have about the use of LLMs? So in security in general.
Tell them about LLMs or just sort of, can you reframe that?
So what is one common misconception that you run into when you're talking to people about the use of LLMs in security?
I mean, one misconception, there's about a billion. Well, the one that I haven't heard in a while, but there used to be this belief that just by using any model, it was training based off of just you talking to it, and there wasn't this understanding that there has to be a secondary plane to capture those interactions to actually do a lot of other work, and it is a lot of work to actually train an LLM. So that was a thing for a while. I don't know if that's still a thing. What about you?
Yeah, I mean. I would say, I kind of going back to what you were just referencing, like ease of use, right? Like how easy it is to instrument things for use in a code pipeline or a development pipeline. Everybody wants a CI tool that they can just like ask the LLM, tell me about all the vulnerabilities, and it comes back and it has no false positives because, you know, they've trained agents or whatever it is. It's a thinking model now. So obviously it can reason its way to all of the vulnerabilities. The more that you utilize those LLMs, the more you realize that that's not necessarily the case. You have to still use deterministic tools and deterministic approaches to validate, to identify vulnerabilities, to, you know, perform certain functions. If you depend wholly on the LLMs, you're going to have false positives, you're going to have reasoning drift, just to what you were saying. You're going to have problems that are actually introduce more security issues into your pipeline than actually reducing those vulnerabilities that you were trying to identify. So,
I mean, the strategies keep changing. And I think that's actually just a, like, I know we want to move off that, but I would just say that, no, like, these tools have gotten really, really good and they can go really, really far. What you find is over time, like that's really what it comes down to. So I would agree and disagree. I'd say like even the deterministic methods are kind of changing and shifting. And yes, in some places that's absolutely true. In fact, like I am building a feature right now that I started with determinism just because I didn't. It's a long story, but yes. But I would just say that like the tools and the techniques change constantly, and that's something that just requires constant upkeep. So you have to learn the baseline. And then after that, you have to really stay on top of it. Cause like I'm watching my engineers and even every week there's some new, like, oh, we should lean into this more than that other thing. And it's just, I don't know, techniques are just changing. So by the way, I just want to say this too. Whenever I talk about developers inside my organization, I'm never talking about like our products capabilities. I'm always talking about how they actually ship software. So that's what I'm referring to. Like their processes and their tools and whatever are shifting a ton for every week. And even sometimes a couple times a week for different reasons. So Anyways, sorry, it's a little bit of a tangent, but I guess my point is that it's a real thing, man. It's hard. It's not easy. And while the tools are getting better and better and better, they still have many, many, many gaps. Laughably so. I mean, watching, and I know we're going to talk about it, but man, watching that stock market dip was bananas. Just made no sense. I'm like,
for security in general. Yeah. So let's talk about that, because it happened after, what was that, like Thursday, Friday, right? When Anthropic announced their Claude Code security right?
Yeah.
And
which, like, they've actually announced before, by the way. I don't know, like, if people realize, but they've announced that before. It's not like brand.
Yeah.
This is a new capability-ish. It is kind of a skill that's just on top of the existing. Basically, they put out like a way to guide the agent, but it's not it's not anything revolutionary at all. It's literally like it's almost frustratingly simple, to be honest with you. I mean, the hardest part is the orchestration. I keep saying this. I've been saying this for a few years. Orchestration, that's the hardest part. Well, if you have Claude Code, and you have the ability to put in superpowers and skills, well, you can just drive it. And so all the orchestration's already like done for you locally, but now you've got something where you point it at specific bugs of classes of bugs and give it guidance for how to, you know, get to truth on those and all that. And that's all great, well and fine, but believe me, that's not a full-fledged, it's got a lot of gaps. And so I kind of laugh because I'm like, the whole market, billions of dollars were lost over a hackathon project. If I'm being honest, that's really what it is.
Yeah.
And it's laughable, and it's also very scary because you realize how clueless the finance people are, how clueless, frankly, the many very smart people are, essentially, about security. They're very clueless. And especially about AppSec. We've always been one of that part. I always felt, and I don't know, how do you feel about this? Because I always felt like AppSec is one of those parts of security that is its own niche within a niche. You know what I mean? And like, even other security people have a lot of misunderstanding and misconceptions about us. I mean, how have you traditionally felt about that?
Just about how like we're viewed by the rest of the industry?
Well, how savvy are security people outside of AppSec, basically, about AppSec specifically? You know, like we talked to Chris Gates, and he's a super, super smart guy, knows a ton of stuff, right? But even he will tell you, like, yeah, I'm focused on just busting in, man. I don't care. I'm going to run these tools. I'm going to try and find an RCE. There's no way Chris is looking through source code, looking for very super complex, nuanced logic flaws or business logic flaws or whatever, is my point.
You know, And that's been the traditional view, right? And even a lot of like partners and people that I work with that do more of the red team and more of the network side, or even, you know, they run whatever, right? Like, you know, they're doing monitoring, they're doing outsourced VSOC work or whatever it is, they don't come from a development background. And I think this is what we've always struggled with in AppSec and ProdSec, is that the rest of security kind of views us as this weird, like, weird branch where we actually like to look at code, I guess, and not necessarily just to break it, but to fix it and to, like, I mean, honestly, the fact that I get excited about logging and monitoring and Crocs and SOC stuff, like, I get, like, glazed looks from the rest of security. And I know I can go on and on.
Yeah, you do until, Seth, there's an incident, and then there's no glazed looks. There's deer in the headlight looks. I know those looks.
Exactly.
Yeah, the one to have those looks where you're like, shit, how do we figure this out? And yeah, it's like, yeah, you gotta have a way to go back and be able to trace back through what happened. And I mean, you know, those boring topics that you're talking about aren't so boring in that moment, is it?
Exactly. And I mean, the new one that I keep harping on, right, is, and I know we've gone back and forth on this, is like account and email and user enumeration and applications, right? And I have like, I have such strong feelings about it because it leads to other issues, right? It's not in and of itself, right? Like, I get that, you know, okay, for GitHub, you share out your username, right? Like, whatever, right? Like, I get that. But when I'm in a bug bounty program and it's for a online banking system, and I see in the list of like out of scope vulnerabilities, email enumeration and user enumeration, it makes me just crazy because it's a complete misunderstanding of how that vulnerability affects the overall threat of an application. And it's because somebody on the security team who's not an AppSec or a ProdSec person decided they didn't want to deal with username or email enumeration vulnerabilities. And this is, it's a small microcosm of how the security industry views AppSec and ProdSec in general, which is, oh, like those vulnerabilities that are called out, right? Like, ah, they're low or medium risk. And they're right, they are, until they're chained together and somebody like Chris is able to utilize the fact that there is email enumeration, and all of a sudden there's brute force enabled and they're pulling creds off of the deep web that have already been exposed and they're logging in using credential stuffing. And yet, like, it was ignored, right? Like, it was ignored on purpose over and over again. And so that's like, I know I'm getting up in arms about this, but it's like, it feels like this is a very, yeah, like you asked, right? Like you asked, I guess. Yeah.
No, it's very true. Like, that's the thing, is that that's actually, okay, this is tapping into something deeper, which is something I've realized, because remember, as somebody who owns a product that's evaluated on the bugs that it finds, which is not the only thing we do, but it is something we have to do at the highest levels if we're going to, you know, go and, which I think this Anthropic stuff has actually helped kind of prove that, but I'll put that aside for now. Where was I going with that? Basically, I deal with a lot of different organizations who review our results against other tools. And in watching how they perform analysis, there's a lot of subjectivity in what people find valuable. You're right. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
I don't always agree with, it's often the, this is a weird thing, because with automation, even with really awesome automation, AI-driven automation, which finds, like we said, more complex things and all that stuff, there is still that, and even if you take tribal institutional knowledge and you infuse it so that maybe it doesn't surface the things, or even put a severity on things that you, like, you know, whatever, don't think should have that severity, or even don't, maybe it's mitigated in some other way, whatever, there's still valid, very valid things that get through that people still have, like, one person might value and another person might not. And that's completely really just up to them and who they are. I guess what I'm trying to say is, it's not a computer science problem. It's a, and that's an interesting psychology and a whole other rabbit hole I could go down, about the psychology of sales, especially with selling a product, the way people's minds work. It's very interesting. It's been very enlightening for me. And as you know, behind the scenes, sometimes it's been very positive, sometimes it's been very negative, my view, but I will say it's very subjective, as to, it has nothing to do basically with us. It has everything to do with the person receiving the bug or whatever. And so, yeah, it becomes very subjective when people are allowed to kind of put their own spin on it and place whatever value they place on it. It's just a rough place to be.
Well, and it is. And I think that's why, I mean, that's why personally I get so frustrated, like, coming from that development background, and you're dealing with development and you're developing a product, you know, like, so you understand what's going into it. And this, like, we're trying to deterministically, like, identify vulnerabilities, but, like, realistically, you're just trying to put features into a product. So you understand how frustrating it can be when somebody comes back and is, like, highlighting something that you don't think is a real risk or whatever it is, but then also isn't giving you kind of full coverage. That's been another, like, kind of avenue that I've been exploring as well, is the fact that the security tools, most of the security tools that have been built over the last 20 years, were not initially built by like computer science experts or developers or engineers. They came out of network scanning. They came out of responses to breaches or whatever else it was. And it's a lot of stopgap, right? Mm-hmm. You look at some of the scanners that are out there from a dynamic perspective, and they were built upon the backs of known vulnerabilities, not necessarily like full coverage of like classes of vulnerabilities. They were built upon CVEs. And that I'm not trying to take away that they are effective and they do identify those things and they reduce risk for companies, but they are sold to the market as complete solutions for application security. And now all we've done is we've trained, man, I am on a soapbox today, Ken, but we have trained management and CISOs to think that the only thing that matters in application security is SCA, DAST, and SAST. That's it.
Yep.
With a sprinkling of threat modeling thrown into it. That's your program. That's all that AppSec does. And, we've got a little bit of a developer training and security champions in there, but that's actually a very small portion. You talk to most mid-sized companies and mid-sized CTOs and even CISOs, you talk to them about AppSec, they'll be like, oh, well, I'm not really an AppSec guy. I came up through the SOC or I came up through NetSec and now, or IAM or whatever it is. Now I manage the security program and, oh, I have to do AppSec. So yeah, I bought this, like we've been running this DAST tool for the last 20 years. That's cool, right? Like that's it. And we know it's not, but it's just this incredibly difficult kind of chasm that we have to jump across to actually give them full coverage. And I just don't see it changing, right? Like even with these agents, even with the new technology that's coming out, we have better tools in our arsenal now, but I haven't seen a change on the ground with most companies I deal with.
I mean, wow, that's a lot to unpack. You're not wrong about a lot of what you said. I would say that you're right. It is kind of like I think like with that Anthropic news, it kind of uncovered exactly what you said, where it's like, there really is a belief that AppSec pretty much just boils down to SAST, DAST, and SCA. And like, that wasn't really what I was thinking about when I was thinking about all the different takes from people, because I spent like 3-4 straight days just like on LinkedIn, just watching everybody's response to this and putting out my own responses and replying to comments and all this stuff. And yours is the one take I actually really hadn't heard yet, which is that this really exposed that people think that AppSec is basically three tools and that you're done. That's it. That's what we do. Not true, obviously. So. That's a very good point that I hadn't heard anybody surface.
Yeah. And like, I know you and I had a friend that reached out recently asking about how to deal with, the velocity of vibe coding, right? They want, they have a product manager that wants to deliver very quickly, but doesn't want to deal with the security team. So what does he say? Oh, we've got a CI/CD pipeline. You should be able to give me a SaaS tool that solves this problem. Full stop, right? And then I don't have to deal with you. I can just deal with that, whatever it is that you put into place. And again, that's like, it's an education problem that we've dealt with, right? Or that we're dealing with that, all of our security tools up to this point have been very compliance driven and very checkbox driven, right? So
I should get off my soapbox. So bad.
Yeah,
I'll tell you what. I got a soapbox for you in a minute here. Yeah.
Okay. So I'll finish my soapbox. You can get on yours, and then maybe we'll move on to something else. But if I go back to the origins of AppSec and the OWASP Top 10, again, a checklist, right? Like we taught people that all they have to do is this small thing, and then they're good. But you go back to it, and all of these scans, all of the compliance that was driven from an application security perspective was never about threat. It was about reducing specific vulnerability sets or vulnerabilities, right? CVEs, based on whatever list was actually out there. And so we've got a very haphazard patching approach to security in general. And it's not a holistic, I'm trying to like formulate my my whole point here and wrap it up into a nice bow, but I don't think I have a good way to do that outside of the new tools that are out there, like Claude, are something that we should add to the arsenal and not throw away what we've done up to this point, because there are huge gaps. I would even say from a just a, okay, so from a dynamic perspective, because that's where I'm spending a lot of time right now. And that's kind of like what we're developing from, you know, at Redpoint, you know, tool wise is, you know, things that are helping us, like it's called Surveyor, but a tool that's helping us when we're doing assessments, that's tying code and dynamic together to identify where the gaps are. Just simply go and compare crawling results, right? Between the different DAST scanners that are out there. And what you'll find is a whole bunch of junk. I'll be honest, right? Like even the new stuff from Project Discovery does a, you know, it does a decent job, but when you have 20, 30, 40% false positives on what is actually an endpoint, tell me how you're doing an effective job in identifying vulnerabilities in a dynamic system, when that means 40% of the traffic that you're sending to the application is non-functional, period, right? And then we have no standard as to how complete any of these scans are, how complete any of the checks are against an application. We have no standard for even telling clients what was covered in a dynamic test, at least on a code review side, right? Like we can show, hey, guess what? We were able to look at all of this code. This is how much we were able to get through. You know, like we know what was actually out there on that dynamic side. It is just the Wild West. Anyway, yeah. I'm sorry, Ken. I'm just going off. Yeah, like, you know.
No, it's good. Yeah. I'm listening because I'm trying to process with what little brain power I have to do. I didn't get much sleep, so I am a little slow today, but I think I'm catching what you're dropping there. So not a lot of benchmarking, not a lot of standards, not a lot of evidence, not a lot of unified like what like level of good, basically a baseline of good, just kind of the Wild West with tooling.
Well, and, yeah, there's.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. And I go back, right? Like you and I had this discussion years ago, like I think even when we were at Fishnet, right? This, the way that security talks about AppSec assessments, right? Like, or application security activities, where they can't decide if, you know, between what's the definition of a penetration test versus an application assessment versus white box, gray box, black box analysis, right? Like, open box, closed box, every organization calls it something different and does different things with it. And so like we just continually muddy the waters, and maybe I'm muddying the waters further by getting up in arms about it here, but it is, you know, it's a constant communication battle and education battle that I find that I'm fighting as I talk with clients and asking them what they actually just even want on a base level to secure their, you know, their environment. Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now. So tell me a little bit about like your response to Anthropic's cloud or Claude secure code review, right? Like, you know, I know you were responding to it, like you were on LinkedIn. Like I know you, from an operational perspective, it sounds like you know, it's been there for a while, so it's gimmicky, but you know, as someone that's building a product, like what is your, I guess, yeah, what is your two sentence take on the whole thing and, you know, how we move on from it?
Two sentence? Are you serious?
Two sentence. Come on, I need a snippet that we could divide up. No, however much you want to talk about it.
Right? This is sorry, dumb. That's what it is. This is dumb. There's my one. This is not dumb. Even full. This is dumb. Yeah, I and it's not just my take. I really was interested more in other people's takes. And well, so the good of it though is like definitely security is not naive. Thankfully, they there are some people that are naive. That's okay. They'll get there. But most people seem to understand that. So many things. They seem to understand so many things. So much of the truth, right? And but that's not what I'm interested in right now. I mean, I've just mentioned that like it wiped billions of dollars off the stock market.
Oh yeah.
And I want to focus on that first because I think that before we even talk about the security implications, like we can talk about the economic impact of it.
Yeah, the business impact has been huge, right? Yeah.
I think it was hundreds of billions that the SaaS market had lost. And then there that created, effectively, huge problems for everybody. And then it wasn't hundreds of billions, but it was, I don't know. I think I read 10 billion, 13 billion of stock wiped off the cybersecurity stock market, simply by announcing this. And so there's all kinds of ripple effects, but I can only speak to the ones that I see as a VC backed, tech startup. And so that's just the perspective that I can share, which is that for sure investors now, they believe some wild things. Like they believe that if you're an AI backed or AI native security company, well, your business model will be consumed by the frontier models. That's a real belief that I know how that sounds. I know how everybody listening thinks of that, but that's actually what their real belief is. Which means that now it's harder to get investments because they are like, well, it's not a question of prove that these frontier models can replace domain expertise and security specific, ways of doing things and knowledge and all that. It's prove that they won't, which is, again, an interesting place to be in. Other ripple effects. There is a rush right now to get from the frontier models. There is a gold rush right now to get as many. And this is going to get weird. It's going to get weird in a second, but we'll just stick with the non-weird part. So there's Azure, GCP, and Anthropic are all fighting each other and they're doing this pressure tactic, got to move, and they're all trying to get businesses, especially businesses like ours, on their platforms exclusively as quickly as possible. I've never seen such a push as I have in the last 4 weeks for these companies approaching us and whatever. And of course, when one of those companies or two out of those three companies release products that are somewhat in competition, at least to the first level, because there's multiple levels. I mean, I'll explain all that, but it becomes a sort of, well, why are you so interested in my long-running agents being like using your LLMs? We have all these documents that say you can't train on this data. So what's going on, right? And so there's their weirder paranoid part of me on that one. But I will just say, for whatever reason, there's a mad dash to get people using these, moved over to exclusively one model or the other. There is a belief. I've seen a belief that this was purposeful, that the idea is that we don't actually need to be better than any security tooling or people or any of that. But what we need to do is crush enough business to subsume those businesses. We need to create enough fear
so that we are the only provider. And I was like, that's an interesting one too. Obviously, these companies are trying desperately to become profitable and not bleed and hemorrhage money. And so there's a lot of weird things going on. And so the economics, I think, of it are really, really interesting. I could talk through the technical bits, obviously, all day long, right? Like,
yeah.
One argument I see is that this isn't here to replace security. It is to, the goal is to get to a place where we're just not writing bugs, right? And I want to be very clear. There's two parts to that. We just don't write bugs because we run Claude security locally and it fixes things before it gets up there. And then there's the just other belief, which is especially the investor belief, that the models will just write code so securely that you'll never have to worry about it. And again, that's an actual belief of these investors that I actively have to get on a call and be like, that's a legitimate question. We should respond to that. And the whole time in my mind, I'm like, do you know how insane that sounds? What happens with, let's take a picture of society, Seth. We've gotten to a place where all of society just believes that AI will write code perfectly and that there can never be any possibility of it ever introducing a bug. Now, what's important? That system can never, not once, not even across immeasurable amounts of operations and changes across the entire world's code base, it can't introduce one bug, because if it introduces one bug, you need Ken, Seth, and everybody listening to this podcast again. So it just, there's some weird Silicon Valley shit going on that I just don't quite understand psychology of it, but all of that is very, very real. So what will it do? I absolutely think you need Claude security. I think you need Aardvark. I think you need Secure Vibes from Ann Schumann Bardio over at Lyft, which is an open source project. I think you need all the things. Use all the things. Why not? And I'll tell you why, because to your point earlier about our friend who was told overnight, hey, now we're all going to use AI to develop code. We're shipping roughly 30 to 32,000 lines of code every day on this new project due in a couple months. You can't interfere at all because we're shipping at AI speed. We're not shipping at human speed anymore. So everything you have to do is oversight and governance without actually being included. Now, I will promote my company for a moment here. I'm going to put this webinar link in here. I am going to promote this. I think you should show up tomorrow if you want to see some real hardcore, like this is what the new world looks like, with Jonathan Cran, Jay Cran, former Metasploit. He owns Mallory. He's been using our tool, and he's been using our tool not just to find bugs, which is the big thing. Everybody's like, well, you don't want to just find bugs. You need to fix bugs. You need to shift left and all that. And I'm like, absolutely, yeah. But you need to be able to do more than that, because it's not just about bugs, to the point earlier. So why am I saying all this? Tomorrow, we're going to talk a little bit more about what's it look like to secure the developers' code that they're writing. And in that, we talk about using multiple reviewers and then following up on their comments and how to recursively get to good. So that's one way that we discuss it. But we also talk about, like, hey, if you're using one of the new players in the space, the new companies, right? Like us, Zeropath, Corgia, any of these new companies, new players, we're all doing something differently. We're not looking at, like, here's my 100,000 patterns I could pre-fill, and like, hopefully you match one of these. And if you do, let me see if I can trace from this to that. It's like, that's just archaic shit. No, they're actually understanding and reasoning, like, about what is actually changing, why it's changing, the who, what, when, and where of code. Very important questions, and the why as well. So why am I saying that? Well, what comes out of that is, like, you have a massive amount of connective tissue about everything that's happening inside of an organization. And what does that mean? That means you can give somebody the ability to go in and with that data, essentially automate their day, right? And that's the world that we're moving. So forget just bugs finding and fixing. There's a whole program management aspect to this that the new players are leaning into and the old players could never get to. And that's why I say, like, yes, use Claude Security Review. It's kind of a one-off hackathon project. Use Aardvark, kind of that too, right? I mean, it's not, these aren't like revolutionary things. Use them all. They don't cost you a ton. Use them all, but also use like professional products to help you manage your program if you're, you know, a larger program. So anyways, I'm getting back to all this to basically say, like, it's not going to obviously eclipse security. Yes, I think it's good that it's finding and fixing flaws. I think you should have multiple tools that do that. But I think that what AppSec is going to lean into is governance, observability, and managing the systems that keeps code secure. And that's the only thing they can do, because like we talked about with our friend, and I know I'm on a soapbox, so I'll stop here in a second. Like I said, like you talked about with our friend, he wasn't asked. He was told, you're going hands off. You're doing oversight. How are you going to do that? And again, no offense to these old, fuck them. Yeah, offense to the old tools. I've been saying it for 3 years. They're going to die. They will die if they don't adapt, and they haven't adapted. They've adapted with marketing. They've called these different like cool terminologies, their centers and their fabrics and their this, that, and the other. And they're not actually changing anything, y'all. They're just updating their marketing. So yeah, you know what? Screw it. Whatever. I don't care if they die off, because they are the old world. And I agree with the rest of the internet that, and I've been saying it, Seth, how many times have I said it? How many years have I been saying this? These tools are dead. And we're now in the moment where people are starting to realize, like, oh crap, the way I used to work is dead. Those tools are dead, and we need to go a different direction. So whether that's build it or buy it, and now you're going to get into the build or buy consideration. And I actually think, sorry, the last thing I'll say with Claude Security Review and Anthropic and OpenAI or Aardvark and all that, is now it does weaponize where, like, Ramp put out an article, and I'll share it, was by Eli Block. He put out an article about his build experience, because for him, with his specific little small needs, he didn't need anything that was like supercharged and did a whole bunch of things. He just needed some very purpose-built things and was able to build those things himself. So with adding these tools. So anyways, that's everything, Seth. I'm sorry. That's my rant. And what do you like? Have you been watching all
there's
of this?
A lot. There's a lot to unpack there, because I totally, okay. So first up is the fact that OpenAI, Anthropic, and even Gemini to some level are not yet profitable. Right? So what are they going to target? Right? Like, just to go back to what you were saying, they're going to target other businesses and other avenues. thanks. Yeah. So they're going to target businesses that is a natural progression from like, hey, our AI can do X, Y, and Z, right? You know, so if we can target code security, we can target developers. There's avenues there to get people to use the LLMs and to use their products specifically so that they can get to that profitability metric. That is their overall goal. So them pulling, I mean, that one quote that I put into chat, right? Like them pulling at roughly, I mean, that is a wild range to think about, right? Like Anthropic's new tools contribute to roughly a $285 billion to $830 billion market value loss, right? Like that is a wide range. Like that's half a trillion dollars that we're talking about in range there, but that is a massive amount of money. And that tells you exactly how much number one, like, is already valued into the security market and the SaaS software and services markets as it is, but also how much debt and how much investment is going into Anthropic and OpenAI right now. So that's number one. Number two, as far as how it's being used and the utilization, like what you're talking about is expansion in the current AppSec market from traditional tools that are very niche and very limited, ties back to my point on the coverage that we've had in the past, right? Where it has been very much a, you do X, Y, and Z, and you're good from an AppSec perspective, which has never been the case, but that's been the compliance story that we've told for years. We've got to do more. Now we have the capability to do more, but it's going to take companies or people tying all of these different pieces together to give us that full coverage. we've always said this from a security perspective as well, as far as what RAMP actually did, right? What Eli did over at RAMP is the best security programs and the best AppSec programs are very targeted to the developers that are actually, and the product itself that is being developed. So if we're not actually, it's very difficult to secure a product with a generalized security tool. It is. Netflix didn't do this. They built guardrails that were very specific to Netflix. And then they tried to kind of operationalize the idea or to sell the idea to the wider industry that you should do this. But it's always been, hey, it needs to be customized. SemGrep was built on this same concept. Hey, we have to have customized rules to identify vulnerabilities in code. You want to know how many people actually customize those rules, especially outside of kind of the big players that are out there? Yeah, it's very few and far between because they don't, you know, no one's giving that to developers. Developers aren't building their own YAML rules for SemGrep. I would love to see more of that, but realistically, it's not actually happening. And so this customization that's happening now with RAMP, with the utilization of AI to actually identify and build those rules, that's probably happening more today than it did 2 years ago. And the tools in general are going to change. They have to change, to your point. We've said this for a while. Yeah.
Have to. Sorry, just I agree. They have to, yeah.
They have to, because they're not usable. They're no longer context aware, and they're no longer relevant when it comes to the amount of false positives, to the coverage that they're providing. And I know the engineers at those different places are trying to make it work, are trying to integrate their discrete tools and their deterministic tools into LLMs and figure out the best way to actually identify and find and fix vulnerabilities. It's just a matter of whether or not that's the approach that we should be taking. And that's the scary thing. That's where the drop in the stock market does make sense, is that those traditional tools have to change. And if they don't, guess what? Anthropic and OpenAI is going to eat their lunch. Or up-and-comers are going to eat their lunch because they're coming at it with a native AI strategy that just didn't exist 3 years ago.
Well, and like one thing, you know, okay, so, you know, you talk about, okay, when we first started giving the course of how to build LLM-backed applications, like that was insanely hard. And there was no Claude Code. There was no Codex. Mm-hmm. There was no easy. Yep. Now it's like Open Code or whatever the open source, forget what it is, open something variant of that. But the point is that it's never been as easy as it is right now. And back when we've been giving this, back in December when we gave the course, right? It wasn't as easy as it is now to take something that is already locally orchestrated and then infuse it with your own company's institutional knowledge. Again, on a per code base level, on a wider than that code base level. And why is that cool? What you can start to do is actually build skills that you give to your developers. And you're going to have to do this, right? It's all changing. So you're going to have to give them skills that are specific to your organization, but you can actually do that so easily. It's just Markdown, right? Well, that changes the game. The old way that this used to work is that SaaS companies would be like, all right, we're going to work with you. We'll write the rules. Or if you're able to extend it, you have to learn their DSL. You have to go through training. God forbid you want developers to do it. And you have to learn all that stuff or teach developers how to learn all that stuff, like the DSL part of it, but then also the security aspects of it. It's like a nightmare, right? And the maintenance of it, the upkeep, all that crap. It's so old school. Nobody needs to do that. And that was like a big deal, cost a lot of money, involved a lot of people. And now it's like, oh, dude, I can just go to today. I could look at like, I could probably even use Claude to help build, not probably, I could definitely use Claude or Codex or whatever to help me build the skills based off of like pointing it at, say, an MCP server that's got a data store with like, or an API or whatever data store, right? That's got maybe some meaningful information about I don't know, bugs you've seen in the past, what the root causes were, whatever. And all of a sudden you have like skills that can be used at least locally to protect developers as they're writing code. And then you can do something like a real product or build your own thing when it hits the PR level or the change management attestation level. And so like, I guess what I'm trying to say is overnight for almost free, you've given security people the power to be the infinite amount of teams that used to be hired to write rules, or you've given them a way to just in natural language explain things so that they don't have to learn a DSL, they don't have to whatever, and they have for free. So that does change the game significantly. It empowers them quite a bit, and that's only going to get better. So to your point, yeah, this is why I've been saying for the longest time, these companies are these old companies, like if they haven't pivoted other than just updating their branding and marketing and haven't invested in the tech, they are really hosed. And the clock has been ticking, but we're seeing it now. And why are we seeing it? It's because there's no way that a human being can sit there and block. First of all, review PR that, you know, 20, 30, 40 PRs in a day that contain 50 plus lines or files of code. That's a real thing we're seeing. The velocity we're seeing, I've talked about it. It's insane. There's no human eyeballs can manage that. And this is the other problem too, the complexity of the vulnerabilities. Everybody keeps talking. I see this on Reddit. I follow a lot of Reddit threads. And like, I see so much of, yeah, you could use Sneaker. I've even seen SonarQube. They're like, yeah, you can use SonarQube to secure vibe coding. I'm like, the fuck you can? Are you serious right now? Like, okay. Maybe if you had like the most vanilla SQL injection or cross-site scripting, yeah, sure. But like some of the stuff we're going to talk about in the webinar that we're surfacing is like, I show examples of, I'll just use my own code that I wrote, which was very interesting. Like I created this new, for like a RESTful API, I created an access key generator function, right? And so there's a bunch of CRUD operations. Well, I added some, a new authorization decorator inside of that file. And I'm saying I did it, but I gave direction to Claude code Opus 4.5, right? So it wrote that. And so what it wrote was a new function, and it got mostly everything right. But what it failed to realize is that there because there's multiple orgs attached to a key, that you need to be an administrator of every single one. Either way, otherwise you shouldn't be able to delete it, or you can delete somebody else's key effectively, right? Well, it first had to do what? First, it had to establish, and it does this all in seconds, right? And I'm not trying to brag on just my tool. I'm saying all of our tools of the new players work very similarly like this, where it's like, no, it looked at an established pattern of authorization on that functionality. It said there's now a new authorization decorator being added that deviates from the expectations of the previous one, where it's not just that I'm an admin, it's that I'm an admin of all accounts attached to that object. Right. So there was a scoping mismatch. There was a high level permission check that was fine, but there was a scoping mismatch or a more object level mismatch in the logic there. My point is we've got like five examples of things like that, you know, we're going to show tomorrow, but that's the kind of complexity or the complexity of the vulnerabilities that are being passed through. So it's not just volume. It's like, no, these are things that are easy to make mistakes on. And when you have code just being generated like crazy all day long, even with the best guardrails, it's bound to do this. And I've seen, the last thing I'll say there is, in the last 8 weeks, I've seen it add command. And I know Cameron Walters kind of joked. He's like, what did you make your skills say? Make vulnerable code? No. So I had like command injection, for instance, right? Why? Because it was taking input from a setting inside of GitHub Actions, and then interpolating it directly into Ruby, like single tick operators or back tick operators, which means system code, right? No, that's not like the LLM is just like, I'll just take a value from here and interpolate it into the string. Just makes sense. I'm not thinking too much about security there, right? So like, and this is also another thing, a broader concept about what writes code shouldn't review code. That's a whole other thing, whether it's a human or an entity, whatever kind of entity it is, or an AI entity. But anyways, just saying that like Yeah, I think you get what I'm saying. Velocity, complexity, it's all there. It's a total fucking nightmare. And if you don't have something built for the future, you have Sneak, you have whatever, or just crappy DAS scanners of the past, right? How does even DAS work on React anymore? You know, like old DAS tools.
I mean, I could dig into it. Like we've got something coming out pretty quick on the dynamic side of things that I'm excited to show people, but we're, you know, we're still refining some of the edge cases there, but like you would be shocked at how insufficient coverage is right now in the DAS space. And even from some from the tools that security professionals are using, right, and recommending across the board. I don't know how else to say it besides that you will be shocked, but just the analysis that we're starting to do is benchmarking, you know, various engines and crawling and just, you know, what's actually out there. The decisions that people made, you know, 10, 15 years ago as they were building these tools have not lived up to the modern environment and the modern web. They don't, right? Which it shouldn't be that surprising, but it that is the case.
I am curious because I got asked. I was at sorry, you made me think about this. I was at OWASP back in the summer, and somebody came up to my booth and they asked me about AI native DAST, and I was like, I don't think I knew of any. Did you say is Nuclei using that as well? Is that what you're saying? Or Project Discovery?
No. Project Discovery is, I mean, their tools, right, like that they've built, do a fairly decent job for like the low level things that they're trying to accomplish. But even like the crawler that they've got, it's just, you know, strict, like go crawl this website, has deficiencies that you would be surprised to see. Doesn't mean that they're not improving them, but it's kind of surprising when you really start to think about it from a full coverage perspective and what people think they're getting out of these tools. Because they aren't getting that basically, right? And there's no transparency or observability to your point about like code and observability of what tools are doing. There's no observability layer there, and unless you know the application incredibly well, you would not necessarily pick it out that there is this deficiency or these gaps in knowledge, right? And actually coverage of what's going on in an application. Yes. I mean, hell, right? Like just go run Zap multiple times, just the crawler against the same application and see what you get back. The fact that it changes from scan one to scan two, that like as a developer and a library, a tool that I was using, I would never put up with that. And I know I harp all the time on QA tooling, but QA tooling is incredibly robust and they would never accept a tool that did not provide consistent coverage for a single, you know, a single site, a single endpoint, a single API. You would never accept that from a code coverage perspective, because you can't, from one run to the next, you can't be sure that you are getting consistent results. Yeah.
That is the hardest thing with LLMs, as you know, that has been the frustration. And I would say like, I guess if we, not quite 3 years, but like maybe 2 years and 9 months dealing with this crap. And it's been a journey, but yeah, it's like, that's actually the hardest thing is like getting better over time. Getting better over time is not necessarily hard, but not getting worse over time is hard. If that makes any sense, the deviation, we call it drift. A lot of people call it reasoning drift now, publicly. But that's a popular term. But yeah, that reasoning drift stuff is really, but the point is like just zooming out from all this, like there was an overreaction economically to the news that came out. There's no, like, of course, but I think what it will do, obviously selfishly, and I'll just say it. Yeah. Why not? Why wouldn't I say this? Yeah. I hope people realize, so AI security powered tooling is actually pretty dope. Like, Yes, it is. What have I been telling you? It's way better. It's way now. There are costs associated. It's not perfect, and it takes a lot of work to get it right and to get it really right. But when you do, it feels when you deal with whether you built it or you bought it. When you get it right, it feels like magic. You're like, so yeah, I'm a little excited because I'm like, cool. This is a wake up call. Like, yes, you can't stick with the old way of both and it's not just tooling. Like we're talking about tooling, but it's going to impact everything. That tooling impacts your processes, and your processes are going to change. You're going to have to get to a point where every day when you wake up, you have your AppSec Jarvis that helps automate your workflows. You're going to need to get to that point because there's just going to be too much for you to manually do on your own. And you're going to have a lot of things that just need oversight, context infusion, assistance with elevated risk and services due to changes over time, new things being put through that didn't go through a security review process, automated threat modeling. Like everything is going to have to shift to a faster world. And like I've said before many times, security is always about a year or two at a minimum behind of developers. We always are. It's just that's how it goes. Software development is always ahead. Why? Because they're the ones building the processes. And we're in a weird time right now where the developers are still building and still figuring out their processes. Ask me how I know. I watch it every single day with not just our organization who leans heavily into AI coded assistant, but all the teams that I work with or organizations that I work with that are doing that as well. They have nobody's got it just right yet. Everybody is still figuring. And there's this book that's out and it's helpful, vibe coding, all that. But no, people are still figuring this out every day. And why I'm saying that is like until it's really established, like even security, we can't begin to really catch up to this thing that is still in the shifting, if that makes any sense. Like it needs to be kind of somewhat solidified, which I think we're starting to get to. I think we know like roughly how the agentic tooling that developers are using is going to work. We know roughly their workflows, and we know roughly how to deal with any like review comments that come back from the bots. But there's a whole other side of that, which is like actual team. Software's a team sport. So when you have other people, like I could just keep going on and on and on, but we have internal skills just for functional problems and investigations, which talk through just like, this is for team members to be able to like resolve issues if there's sort of degradation in a surface, have an automatic investigation into where, like, you know, why that likely was. And it has like all the past things that we've seen that would, you know, if you saw this issue, it was probably here and it was probably this, things like that. And all of these things to just get everybody to be able to move really, really fast without just breaking things or creating like a bunch of slop. And so all that to say is, AppSec's having its moment now, finally kind of catching up as these processes are starting to get somewhat solidified. And I think that's where we're at in this timeline.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to build security tools and processes on a moving target. Because we don't, if the developers haven't decided how they're actually going to develop code, all we can do is recommend and basically sit back and start thinking about the threat. Which makes you pretty nihilistic because there's no way to secure an application against a threat when the application or the process doesn't exist yet, right? It's all just a theoretical exercise in our minds. And that's kind of where we're, yeah. And I think that's why we get so positive and negative about things is we can see how well it's going to do in certain situations and for us to use internally from a security and an AppSec perspective. But we also see the velocity that's changing on the other side, the amount of code that's being generated and the insecurity and the threats that are popping up that didn't exist 6 months ago or even 2 months ago. And so it's kind of hard to rectify that in our own minds.
Yeah.
All right. Very hard. Yeah. All right, Ken. So this was the soapbox episode. The hour's over. We didn't even get to, you know, like any of the, you know,
articles that we had.
Articles or anything that we've had. So we'll push those into the newsletter this week. And yeah, I don't know. Any final thoughts before we call it today? You know, like we have been going for quite a while.
Don't use Sonar Cube to secure vibe coded. Organizations, what's your takeaway?
Well, the fact that you know, it goes into a Reddit thread, and then it's also going to be pulled into generative AI responses. I think that's going to be my go-to response on Reddit from now on out, here on out, is just to start recommending like all of these old standards, just so we keep our jobs. That's going to be my new approach. Just thanks for that, right? Okay. I'll create an AI bot that just goes in and recommends Sonar Cube on everything, right? Like, have a security problem? Sonar Cube can solve that for you. Sorry, apparently we're bashing on Sonar Cube, but yeah, probably deserves it.
Sorry. Anyway, they're the worst of the worst. So it is what it is.
It is what it is.
For security, not for functional review. That's what it was originally for. Anyways, yeah, you know, we never even got to. I know we got to wrap this episode up, but I'll just say this too: we never even really got to the economics of the consulting side either. Because I just want to say this. Two things to keep in mind. One, OpenAI and all the other frontier models are trying to set up huge partnerships with big consulting firms. And I don't mean just for security. I mean for everything. The goal being to get them on their models and help them build the tooling to use those models for their consulting practices. So obviously that's going to extend to security. And on that note, one of our many mutual friends, we seem to know a lot of people that own consultancies. One of them had reached out to me and we were just like talking about like this kind of news with Anthropic and the new world that we're in and everything. And they actually had a client come to them who's been a longtime client who was sort of like, well, let me prove, you need to now prove your value because I ran Claude security review on my code base and I felt it did a really, really good job. So I want you to draft up an explanation of your pricing and like your value justification. It sounds like going to use that as a negotiation tactic to drive the price down. So this is impacting like consultancies. It's impacting product companies. It's impacting, definitely, you know, that companies are now, their bills are going up like crazy with AI assisted coding in terms of like token usage. And so that's also changing, I would say, internal Defender world too, because now you do have access to the same LLMs that the rest of your company uses, and you should hypothetically be able to leverage that. Instead of pulling security tooling, you could potentially instead use their existing engineering budget and just wrap around that. And if that can solve some of your biggest headaches, along with maybe some open grep rules or whatever, you can, again, in a smaller org, this works, couple it together, maybe that changes the economics there. So everything is changing. That's my two cents. But also, like I said, the reaction to that news is also kind of on the finance side.
Yeah. Ooh. I mean, honestly, that's what keeps me up at night, Ken, right? Like running a small consultancy is how we stay on top of it. Yeah. But I know we will.
Imagine.
I know we will. It's just like, it's, I don't have a crystal ball, right? Like I can't tell you where we're going to be or what we're going to be doing in a year.
Because we're not in charge. That's the truth. We're just, again, we always follow.
We're along for the ride.
We lead. Correct. Yeah. We just do our best to go along, and we're just little buddies along the journey, trying to keep you safe and get you nutrition and tuck you in for your naps and give you some water and make sure you're okay. But that's the best that we can do. You still got a journey that you got to go on, and we're just along for the ride. So
just along for the ride. Exactly. Well, thanks for coming along for this ride today and the soapboxes that we got on. Appreciate everyone. Join Slack. The conversation's going to keep going there, I'm fairly certain. And otherwise we will see everyone next week. Appreciate y'all.